Welcome to the podcast of Lancaster Brethren in Christ Church, located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. LBIC is a community being transformed by the love of Jesus, sharing this love with all people. We want this podcast to be an extension of our community and a connection with familiar voices. Together, we want to think about how to follow Jesus in our particular moment. So enjoy the podcast. We're grateful to have you join us as a part of the LBIC family.
Hi, I'm Jonathan, also a normie. I like that phrase, don't call me Norm, and I'm probably not any more normal than you are, but there you go. One of the things I do is help the youth leadership out with communication, and so the Watch the Works reminds me that youth, really looking forward to having you participate in Watch the Works July 2nd in helping out capacity. So the youth group, we're hoping a bunch of us turn out for that. And by the way, if you're a rising sixth grader, like, you've begun your journey with the youth group. So if you parents want to be, or if you're a new parent and want to be part of that communication, you know, let me know so I can add you to the list. So thank you for being willing to listen to a few words this morning from me. Have you ever proclaimed something to strangers? Proclaimed something to strangers. When I was in 20-something, my close friend was getting married, and so several of us male buddies did what male buddies sometimes do, and we threw him a party. I honestly don't remember what all we did with him, but it was good, clean fun. We took him around town, and we did stuff with him, and we made him do stuff. And one of the stops that we made him do was this popular ice cream stand. And we made him bring his saxophone along and play it for the whole crowd. It was very popular, so there's tons of people outside. And so we put his saxophone case open on the ground to collect money for their honeymoon. And then I did this thing I've never done before. I climbed up on a post and I announced to the crowd, like, crowd of strangers that did not know me. In our culture, right, that's generally not acceptable, to try to get the attention of strangers unsolicited. Although in some cultures it is, and cultures around the world or throughout history, that was more of a normal thing. And yet, while it isn't usually okay to do that in our culture, I got a taste that evening of what it might be like if we lived in some, you know, if we were in a place in a climate that was more friendly to that kind of thing, because the people were happy to hear what I was announcing. And they could tell, like, there's music coming, and they could tell that we were excited, and then they got excited. And he only played two songs, but he made a decent handful of cash. He played his recital piece, which got a few coins, and then we forced him to play Kenny G, which is actually something very, very insulting to a real saxophonist to do. And he made tons of money on Kenny G. I mean, just tons. So it's just one of my earliest memories of that people welcomed a message that they weren't even expecting. And also the thrill of proclaiming something when it is a welcome message and when it's received happily. So in our story today, Jesus sends out workers to a harassed and helpless world. The story lists 12 people by name and sometimes by occupation or reputation. And then he gives them instructions to go to their people with a message, whether it's expected or not, to share good news from God. To share good news from God, to cure diseases, to get rid of demons, to raise to life, and to recognize that they have freely received, and therefore they should give freely. Well, let's just read it. Let's just read the story here. And this is Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 35, and then we'll read into chapter 10 a little ways. So Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless like sheep, but without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Agricultural metaphors then and now are always work. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. And these are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, proclaim this message: the kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you've received, so freely give." 12 people called to live and share the good news of Jesus. So let's talk about evangelism. That's a light and fun activity we can all agree on, right? Well, no, that's generally not the case. Many of us have widely varied experiences with evangelism. Some of us love the concept or the activity, or have had times in life when we do. Some of us detest it, or have had times in life when we do. And if you suspected, as you might, that this sermon is about evangelism, you may be tempted to tune out now, and I would not blame you. I think we actually should be a little worried if we totally love evangelism or totally hate it, because it isn't really one thing or another. It's a good idea that has often gone bad. But before you tune out entirely, I hope you'll humor me with another story and maybe ponder your own stories of things you are passionate about. What things are you passionate about? Have you ever cared about something so much that you want others to care about it too? Have you ever cared about something so much that you want others to care about it too? This is my razor. A few years ago, I took a deep dive into the art of shaving. Yes, art and shaving. You can show it, since this is kind of small. There we go. That's my razor. This is my much-loved traditional double-edged razor. It's the Edwin Jagger DE89 with the barley chrome finish. We have a relationship, see. It's both a tool and a skill. I have a lot of practice with the amount of real estate I have to shave, so. And I'm happy to share the good news of traditional shaving with anyone. I'm happy to share that. My only convert that I know of is Nate Milton, but I think he'd already decided to go this route before he even talked to me, and ain't that just the way evangelism works? So that's my shtick, shaving. What are you passionate about? I mean, we all have these things, right? And I know this is very trivial. We have these things that we are open to sharing with others and like to. And no, I mean, if you don't like this and have no interest, you have not offended me in any way. But yes, if you do like it, I will feel personally responsible and awesome and proud, even though I know that is ridiculous. The point is, people love sharing in saxophone music and ice cream. They love sharing about the things that they get interested in, hobbies and whatnot. Some of you even smiled when I held up a razor that I like, of all things. Sharing what we care about is a beautifully human thing to do. Sharing about something that has brought us joy or peace is beautifully human. So it's curious, at least in our climate, that it's actually really difficult and awkward to share freely about something as interesting as Jesus. It's far easier, it's easy to share joy about razors. Not a problem. But in addition to shaving, I also do like Jesus. I suspect some of you do as well, or at least a little curious about Jesus. And that is something I would think and say, that I like Jesus, but I wouldn't jump up at an ice cream parlor and announce to everyone how much I like Jesus. It's just awkwardness. Is that your reality too? Am I being overly sensitive, or is that something that you would sense as awkwardness, that you would hesitate before proclaiming even a curiosity about Jesus to strangers? I don't have any great advice today about how to resolve that awkwardness, but I just think it's worth naming it when we're encountering a story like this, where we have the 12 going out bravely or not so bravely into the world to share good news. There's just an awkwardness in our culture today, so let's name it. And I think just to follow this a little deeper, I do think that awkwardness is pretty valid. It comes from a history of horrible mistakes regarding sharing the good news of Jesus. Horrible mistakes. Before we go there, just a quick definition of what we're even talking about. Evangelism. Let's just play with words a little bit, because I'm a bit of a word hobbyist. Evangelism, evangel, is a Latin word. It just means good news. So evangelism is just taking part in the good news. It got translated into Old English as Godspell, in Middle English as Godspell, which is also a cool musical about the gospel, and in today's language, in English at least, gospel. So gospel, good news, evangelism, all this stuff, it's the same word, just in different languages. And I'll also admit that many of us have grown up with a desire to, or whether we desired it or not, we experienced the idea of the gospel in a nutshell. Well, what is the gospel in 3 or 4 points? And this, if you're hungry for that, this sermon will leave you still quite hungry. I'm not sure there is a gospel in a nutshell. I'm not sure that's a great motivation to try to distill the gospel down. We have the gospel. In fact, we have 4 of them, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They are book length, and it's a story of Jesus, and it's everything from afterbirth in a pile of hay to horrible, humiliating death to amazing resurrection to all the in-betweenness of teaching and healing and normal life and praying and all this stuff. And all of that is the gospel. So if we do find the need to summarize it, I hope we summarize it in a like back of the book kind of teaser of like, oh yeah, gospel's this, that, that, and that, and that doesn't do it justice. I hope you will inquire more about the subject. You know, that's maybe what's helpful. But if we're looking for what is the gospel, it's there. It's these long form stories that are, I would recommend a good read. It's a great word, gospel, but I don't think the word is the problem. Back to the history, the horrible history sometimes of gospel sharing, of evangelism. Like, I remember the first time I was evangelized, or when someone thought they were evangelizing. It was a pamphlet in elementary school that a kid had brought from Bible school. And they passed it around. It was like a small comic book, and it ended with the main character in a lake of fire, which seemed, even at the time, kind of scary and weird, to be honest. And I was brought up with a lot of Bible stories, and even then, and even now, I didn't see how that story connected very well with the story in the Bible, or with the Gospels themselves. Until quite recently, many evangelistic outreaches were called crusades. Crusades. So crusade is a word that when roughly translated, means let's kill as many Muslim Jews and even our fellow Christians as possible, all while pretending to do it for God. Well, that word doesn't actually mean that literally, but historically that's what a crusade was. And yes, even though the actual crusades happened 800 years ago, many people around the world are still a little bitter about it, and rightly so. Often, even today, what pretends to be evangelism is often a method for conquering others, sometimes using words and ideas that are even violent, or at least very us versus them. Phrases such as winning souls and saving the lost tend to regard us, whoever us is, as all good, and the other as all bad, and until we can turn them to join our camp so that we can feel more comfortable. I'm not even sure us and them belongs with gospel sharing. Like, if the good news is from Jesus, then does it need to be a one-way thing of the people who have it towards the people who don't? Or is the person who, like me, who thinks they've heard it enough times to grasp the good news of Jesus, versus a person who's just encountering this and is curious about it, are either of us in need of the gospel less? Or are either of us a potential audience for the gospel any less? Perhaps it's not us and them. Perhaps it's God and us, and it's a beautiful thing that we could welcome. Is it worthy of welcoming? Is sharing Jesus' good news perhaps not all bad? Have you ever had a good experience with hearing about Jesus, with experiencing Jesus' healing through others, experiencing Jesus' presence through others? I mean, it takes a courageous person, dare I say an evangelistic person, to do some downright beautiful things. Have you ever had someone pray for you uninvited? Like, not a holier-than-thou kind of praying for you, but like someone took the time to notice that you were sick or in trouble, and they prayed for you, like in a humble and a caring way. I've seen people who are moved by suffering and will, because of their commitment to Jesus, move towards people who are hurting just because they know that person needs someone to be present. Do you know anyone whose convictions, formed by Jesus, propelled them to, say, stand up against racism or some other sort of evil? This is all participating in Jesus' good news, and I think those are beautiful examples. Is it possible that sharing Jesus can be beautiful and welcome? And again, sharing isn't one way, it's sharing. Is it possible that receiving and engaging? Yeah, and again, if evangelism can be good, I don't think it's just for non-Christians. Church people need the good news. Sometimes we need it pretty badly. And that would be a fun topic to pursue further at some time. But let's dig into our story. So we have this story from Matthew 9, and it's this beautiful and insightful glimpse of evangelism done right. Jesus sending the 12 out as a healing force in a world that wants healing. And I think there's several ways of experiencing the good news that's happening here that might be worth recognizing. First, we see Jesus and the 12, they are willing, well, I don't know how willing they are, but they are going to face the problems of the world. They're going to face the world's problems. We see there's getting rid of demons, these evil tormentors of individuals and groups. There's Jesus healing sickness. We see that in verse 1. And then in verse 8, we also hear of raising the dead, and we hear specifically about leprosy. It seems as though the first move of the gospel is the move toward those who are suffering, a move towards the suffering. Dare we notice those around us who are suffering in some way? Can we notice our own suffering? so that we can join with others better. The mention of leprosy in verse 8, I think, is really interesting too. Bible translators, you may have noticed, of late are very eager. They will fall all over themselves to point out that leprosy mentioned here is not just leprosy specifically, which is a specific bacterial infection, but this refers to a variety of skin diseases. Okay, we hear you, Bible translators. So this is skin disease, and skin disease then and now, except for those psoriasis commercials on TV, which make it look so cool. But anyways, skin disease then and now is somewhat scary and leads people to being avoided and ignored. And Jesus does the very opposite of avoiding and ignoring. The good news is Jesus and the 12 move toward the lepers, towards the ignored. Have you ever been ignored? Have you ever been ignored? Who around you in your lives is currently being ignored? Another point from our story, about probably 2 minutes into this sermon, some of us, certain personalities who are hyper conscientious, you started doing that thing we do well, you start beating up on yourselves, saying, oh, I'm just not doing enough to share the good news. Those voices in our heads. I know those voices too. I think this story might quiet those voices a little bit. I hope it does. If we look at it not as a message to a single individual, to just you personally, to rise up and proclaim the good news or rise up and heal people, but it's to a group, the 12 in this case, but it's to everyone who joins in. Taking part in the good news is not a solo. It's not a solo. We all have opportunity to be faithful to Jesus, to move towards the ignored and to the suffering. And as a group, as a whole, then, because the more people that get involved in this, then a picture might emerge of this Jesus who is present as a healer. That's also why I think it's so important to think about, as a church, how do we re-evangelize ourselves so that we can keep tuning up, so to speak, so that our music can be more representative of Jesus' good news. Another point, these people are real, like us. They have names, they have nicknames. We see this in verse 2 through 4, names like Simon and Andrew and John. They have careers, they have identities, they even have shady ones like tax collector or zealot. And they have parents. It still blows my mind. You can come up to a stranger and you don't know them, and you're maybe whether you notice or not, you're feeling a little suspicious, holding them at arm's length, and someone says, oh, that's so-and-so's daughter. And you're like, oh, you actually don't know them any better, but all of a sudden you feel comfortable with them. Or oh yeah, that's the dad of so-and-so. And then you all instantly the rapport and the trust is there. I don't know how that works. It just seems to be a very human thing. We have it in this list here. Oh, that's Alphaeus' son, that's Zebedee's, and that's so-and-so's brother. And hey, these are normal people. This is a normal description of average humans trying to make human connections. They have reputations, they have just destinies, such as Judas. So they are as fragile and as error-prone and as weird as you are. And yet, they are invited to take on sickness and take on death and evil. A final point from our story comes if we read just a little bit beyond the passage we've already read, which I'm going to do now. After Jesus calls and sends the 12, he continues with further instructions. I'm just going to read this, Caleb. You don't need to post it. But starting in verse 9, take no gold or silver or copper in your belts, no bag for your journey or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for laborers deserve their food. Whatever town or village you enter, find out who in it is worthy and stay there until you leave. As you enter the house, greet it. If the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. So, not everyone who encounters the good news of Jesus is going to welcome it. It seems so obvious, but I think we Christians routinely don't get this. Not everyone who encounters the good news of Jesus is going to welcome it. So do we wring our hands then and worry and ask, well, what do we do? What do we do to save them? Or even worse, I mean, this phrasing, what do we do to compel them into the gates of heaven? Which is an awful question, because the concept of compel and gospel should never be used together. Because let's face it, any time the choice between heaven and hell is made to sound as simple as a light switch, we're just not doing justice to the complexity of good and evil and human choice. We can trust God to be the God revealed in Scripture who welcomes people with open arms. And we can trust people are going to be like us. There are times when we will look like Jesus, and there are times when we surely do not. What we hear in this part of the story is this fundamental aspect of the good news, of God's good news, is that the gospel is rejectable. The gospel is rejectable. And in this story, Jesus tells the 12 to entrust themselves to another's hospitality. Don't bring your stuff, just be at the mercy of others. And they might be rejected. They might be rejected, because that is the nature of the gospel. That is the nature of God, I might add. No one is coerced. No one is forced to welcome God or forced to welcome God's good news. No one should be forced or manipulated into accepting God. And I love this image that Jesus evokes. If rejected, shake the dust off your feet. Now, I mean, that could be read as like pride and arrogance of like, oh, even your dirt is not worthy of touching me. But I think in the story, I'm hearing something very different by this. Just because we accept the responsibility to share good news, to move towards people, to take part in Jesus' healing, just because we accept that responsibility does not mean we have to have anxiety about the outcome. Just because we accept responsibility doesn't mean we have to have anxiety about the outcome. Wait, wait, you say. If I am responsible for something, the world rests on my shoulders regarding that thing, and if the outcome isn't the hoped-for outcome, then I am a failure. I have failed this responsibility. Surely, we say, if I take responsibility, I will be the one to blame for failure. Which is why no one wants to take minutes in a committee when you ask them to volunteer and raise their hands, or volunteerism in general. We all fear failure. We don't want to be in a position where we will be blamed for the failure. But our responsibility isn't necessarily to achieve success, however we might define that. Our responsibility is to be faithful to Jesus, to notice the suffering, notice the ignored and the pain, and to touch and share as Jesus would. But that might not be welcome. It might not be welcome. So if rejected, move on. Don't carry that dust with you. Shake it off. Shake the dust from your feet so that you can keep moving. I too have Taylor Swift in my head right now after that line. I apologize. Shake it off, keep moving, all that. But the point is, we can be responsible, and then if there's nothing there, shake it off. If rejected, move on. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was me. Maybe it was us, the church, failing. Don't carry the dust with you. Maybe the timing wasn't right. Maybe this is one of those situations we wouldn't wish on anybody. Maybe sometimes, in order for me to welcome the good news of love and healing, sometimes I have to hit rock bottom first and realize that there is a depth of need there. Maybe it's that timing. Or maybe there's someone else who will represent Jesus in this situation, Jesus' love and healing presence. Maybe it's not you or I or us. Maybe what we think is rejection isn't. Maybe when someone seems to be rejecting God's good love, they aren't, and we just don't realize it. We have blinders on, we don't see it. No one's going to be served well if we carry the dust with us. Responsibility without anxiety. Being faithful doesn't mean we have to control the outcomes. I leave you with this bag of brown sugar. My cooking methodology is pretty much the same as how I hope I am learning to share Jesus. I look at what's there, I smell what's there, and I ask, could this use some flavor? And then I try to introduce flavorful things like brown sugar, or cumin, or cinnamon, or Jesus. Follow me here, I'm being a little fast with the metaphors. There are recipes, believe it or not, that do not call for sugar at all. And there's some that do call for sugar, but they call for white sugar, which is almost brown sugar, but is sadly missing the brown. I go straight for the flavor. Go straight for the flavor, and I tell you, my family will tell you, I do not always get this right. It's just really a continuous experiment of adding brown sugar to things to see if it works. Chili is a great example. You don't know it's there, but you just know it tastes good. Point being, we have enormous opportunity to live very bland lives in our world. To live bland lives. We can do what everyone does. We can try to, for instance, buy our way to happiness, or at least buy our way to numbness, and try to bury our heads in the sand. We can ignore hurting people. It's what we do, because it makes us uncomfortable. We can do this. But maybe bland isn't the only option. What if there is good news from Jesus? And it's actually good, and it's not prone to failure. And what if we can take part in that without getting stuck in self-blame or blaming others or even perhaps blaming from others? Will you help me? Can we help each other to notice Jesus and trust Jesus and to notice the people that Jesus is moving toward?